Everybody, welcome to the Badgerland Birding Podcast. This is episode number two, bringing you birding news from the Badger State and beyond. We're here with our friend Eric Conkle today. Excited to talk about some of the work he's done, as well as kind of our upcoming first of the year birding challenge that we do every year. It's been like, what, at least 5, 6 years we've done this?
Even more than that, actually. I think like
It's
pretty
been a
much since we've been birding, we've been trying to do a first of the year birding challenge. We just haven't always filmed it.
Yeah, but basically the idea is every year your totals for the birds you've seen reset to zero. So then every bird you see is new for the year. So we have a tradition of going out on the first day of the year to try to see as many species as we can in a single day. So it's always very fun. It's good to have a fresh start and it's very exciting.
I'm going to find out real quick how many years we've been doing this because we definitely just have a playlist on our account.
Yeah, they're pretty fun. And Eric's come with the past couple of years. I was jealous the one year I was in Louisiana, you guys got that purple sandpiper on the first.
We had a great day when you were in Louisiana.
Yeah, it was pretty solid. And unknown to the viewers is I actually did my own little first of the year challenge with my girlfriend, and we got a white-winged scoter in Louisiana that someone had reported previously. So that's a solid bird, but never ended up finishing that video because you guys had yours to put out, and I felt like your total was more solid than ours was.
Did you hear that theme music playing in the background?
No, I didn't hear anything.
Okay, I got to our page and started playing theme music.
Okay.
Okay, the first one was in 2017, was the first one that we actually filmed.
Okay.
So now we're
Year seven.
yes, this is year seven.
Okay.
So yeah,
Okay.
each year it's fun, each year it's exciting. But like you were saying, Eric came with us the last year and with me the last 2 years. Eric hasn't said anything yet. Eric, how are you doing tonight? How
Yeah,
excited are you to
hello.
be part of the first of the year birding challenge yet again?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's been really fun these past couple of years.
Do you have like a favorite thing about like do you get excited about the first of the year and keep like everything's new?
Yeah, it's fun. I really like any of the big days. They're all really exciting, but especially the first. These past couple of years, I've gotten a lot more into listing. So it's really exciting to hit January 1st and start building it up all over again.
I like that it's the first time and really the only time all year that I get excited about seeing like house sparrows and starlings. Cause it's like,
Right.
you see them and you're like, boom, there it is. Write it down, count it. That's added to the total.
Yeah, and there's definitely something to be said about like once you reach a certain number, like, well, can we get five more? Can we make it 35? Like, can we do this? It's just, I like the things that are kind of more task-based, where it's like we need to accomplish this certain thing or we're going after this one species. So yeah, I always really enjoy it. I think this year there's probably going to be some rare stuff that we go after because sometimes it's just based on how many birds can we get. But I think this year it's going to be that plus like, can we see some of these rarities that are in the state that haven't been seen very often.
I feel like we've had some years where we've gotten a lot of rare stuff though. And then there was, we'll probably talk about this more later, the infamous Hammond's flycatcher year. But before we get into that, actually, Derek, I want to tell you about the first time that I met Eric ever, which I think you were already in Louisiana at the time. It was the Smallbill Delania. And Rob was just like, I'm bringing this guy with us named Eric. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And Eric, it was when you were like, definitely into birding, but like hadn't seen that much stuff yet. So a lot of stuff was like super exciting to you still. That was just like not necessarily common here, but not that rare. So I think we went for like a redneck greed then after, and we just would see stuff along the way, and you're like, oh, that's a lifer. And it would be something that would be like, you're like, oh, that's also a lifer.
Yeah, that was my first year of birding still. So I think I had like 200 some birds at the time. So not a ton, but I was racking them up then. Yeah, I know that day we got the red-necked grebe, which was really cool. We got good looks at that bird.
I think we got like scoters or something too, something random like that.
Oh yeah. We got some surf and white-winged scoters, I think.
Yeah,
Sound like
and
one.
we went all the way down to Illinois that day for the Alania, which at first it didn't seem like we were gonna get it. And then you had to like press yourself against a fence and look in the thick shrubs in order to see it.
So for people that don't know, Smallbill Delania, it's a like a flycatcher type South American, really random that it was in Illinois type bird.
Had no business being in Illinois whatsoever.
Yeah, so it was a rant like a very random rare thing that showed up. So how long have you been birding for, Eric, then?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define birding.
Like you
I
started keeping a
started,
list, I think.
yeah, I started listing in like spring of 2021. But for at least a few years before that, I was heading out to Buena Vista here in Portage County, Wisconsin, looking for snowy owls in the winter. And I was doing that for probably, I don't know, maybe 3, 4 years before I started, noticing other birds.
What was the next bird you noticed after the snowy owl? You're just like, yeah, I'm looking for snowy owls. And then one day you're just like, you know, that horned lark's looking pretty good.
It was snowy owl, and then from there I started looking for short-eared owls, and then after that I saw a picture of Lapland longspur, and I thought that looked really cool, so I spent a lot of time looking for that, and it took me a long time to find one, but I found a lot of stuff as I was looking for the longspur. And then I think after that, the next big push was actually that I saw one of your videos, your
Hey.
one of your warbler migration videos down in Milwaukee when you were just racking them up, getting bay-breasted magnolia and everything. And I was just like, whoa, that's cool. I didn't know we had so many colorful little birds in Wisconsin. And then from there I started got a field guide and started reading a lot more about all of our birds online and just really, really got excited about it.
So I feel like the owl's really the gateway there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if it wasn't for the snowy owl, I don't know what I'd be doing right now.
Probably something like more productive, like cheering, like building bridges or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd probably just be obsessed with fish or reptiles or something else.
You can always get into mothing.
Yeah, I could. Rob keeps trying to get me to get into some mothing stuff.
So for
One
people
of
that
the
don't
other
know,
local birders here.
yeah, Rob is one of our other birding friends. It seems like there are a select group of people that they get really into birds and then they get really into moths. I don't know why. Like it, you'd think it'd be butterflies or something, but it's moths for some reason is the next
There's so many
step.
different kinds. There's like probably undiscovered tiny moths out there. Like it's the final frontier of ecology.
Yeah, from what I understand, it really sounds like that.
Oh, it's funny because now you started kind of like getting into it by watching one of our videos, and now you've appeared in several videos. And
I
like
know.
you're probably one of the most random people that pops up because it'll be like, we're in Oregon, and then you happen to be there because you were doing a seabird survey, or like it's the first of the year, and boom, you pop up, or the flamingo video, boom, you're just there. You like never know when you're gonna make an appearance, but it always seems
I
like to
know.
serendipitously work out.
Yeah, I'm always traveling around, so I'm only really here kind of sporadically in the winter.
Yeah, tell us about some of the work you were doing out in the northwest part of the US.
Yeah, so for the past couple of years, I've been doing some point count surveys for marbled murrelet and spotted owl, which have been really cool.
So with the murrelets, I remember when you were telling us about them, they nest in trees, right? So it's this little seabird that then like comes inland to breed, which just seems really
Yeah,
weird.
they've got a really crazy life history. They're little alcids, which are kind of like a mix between a penguin and a duck for people who aren't familiar.
Good
And
description.
they're, I don't know, maybe like blue jay sized roughly. But they're tiny little diving seabirds that feed on fish, and they nest up to 50 miles inland, up towards the top of old growth conifer trees, which is really crazy. There's not any other seabird that nests in trees like that.
Yeah,
And
it's
it was
just.
actually the last breeding North American bird, what am I trying to say, that we found the nest of,
Oh,
which is
really?
pretty cool. Yeah.
People are probably confused. They're probably like looking at shorelines and just like, how come we can never find what these are? Like, maybe they just get created spontaneously and
Yeah, right.
eventually breed.
I think the person who actually found the first one was just a random logger who was climbing a tree for something and just stumbled upon a nest.
Dude, that'd be like so weird to just be climbing a tree and be like, what's this seabird doing on the top of it?
Yeah.
That's wild. So there's been this push of ancient murrelets. Like we had the one, maybe two in the state. Did you get to go see that too?
I went and saw the one that was in Door County. I tried with a couple of friends to get the one that was up in Ashland too, but we showed up the day after it left, so we didn't have any luck.
So the day after it left, wasn't that when the Door County one was reported? So were you guys all up there and then you're like, oh man, it's in Door. That's tough. But the Door County one was pretty close. Like that was a solid bird
It
to
was.
see.
I know. I'd much rather do two drives and actually get a good look at the bird rather than seeing it from a few miles away through a scope,
Yeah.
which is what it would have been best case scenario out of Ashland.
Yeah, definitely. That's
I do
crazy.
want to get back to the spotted owl thing because you say you did spotted owl surveys too.
Yeah.
And that news has come out recently about the government essentially wanting to cull like 500,000 barred owls to
I
try to save the
know.
spotted owls. Like, what do you think about that? Like, we were going to make a video about this at some point because it's just like a wild thing to hear because barred owls obviously like are not an invasive species technically, even though they've expanded their range west. Like,
Yeah.
I don't
No,
want people to spot,
I'm
but you
excited
know.
about it.
You're excited about it?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a great thing. Well, whether it works or not, I mean, I guess we'll see, but it should at least give the spotted owls a chance. Because right now, habitat loss and the invasion of barred owls from the eastern US are the two biggest things leading to their decline.
And the barred owls
So,
actually like prey on them, right? That's like one of the big
yeah.
things. They just outcompete and actually prey on the spotted owls.
Yeah, they'll sometimes prey on them. And they're just really aggressive overall, really territorial. Whenever the spotted owls out there vocalize, the barred owls will come and harass them. So most of the ones that are up there in the area where I was doing surveys in Oregon, they wouldn't even vocalize anymore just because they're so conditioned from the barred owls attacking them.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
crazy.
So
Yeah.
essentially, there's the spotted owl that lives in the northwest that has a much smaller range, and then the bigger barred owls that are more common expanded their range, and then they're out competing slash eating the spotted owls.
And hybridizing too,
Okay,
which is
and
another
that's
problem.
interesting that sometimes they eat them, sometimes they mate with them. Like,
Yeah.
yeah, it sounds complicated, but so basically the government said there was some proposal for people to go out and shoot like 500,000 barred owls. So that's where the
It's
like,
like an actual sizable percentage of the barred owl population, I think that would be key.
right. Yeah,
Well,
I
do
mean,
you?
I haven't really looked into it too much, so I guess it kind of depends on the details. You know, if they're handing out a license to just any random person to go shoot owls, I mean, I could see how that could lead to some spotted owls being shot.
Yeah.
But you know, assuming that it's people who are trained in the field and know how to identify a spotted owl, I think yeah, it could really make an impact and help the spotted owls hopefully rebound.
I feel like
I
this is what
just
hunters have been waiting for their whole life. Like, finally, a time when they get to go out and just try to shoot owls. Correct.
I don't know. I feel like to most people, it's just like a visceral reaction of like people shooting owls. I don't like it because that's kind of how I feel about it. I'm just like, man, like who would want to shoot an owl? That just seems awful.
That's like
You
the
know.
complicated thing about that kind of conservation, though, is like, what else do you do to say, like, sorry, spotted owls, your time has come. You lost the evolutionary wheel of luck.
I know that's the tough thing. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to, you know, kill the owls, but
So here's a
the way it's going
proposal.
right. Oh, sorry. Go
Oh
ahead.
no, I was just gonna say we do a spay, we do a capture neuter release program like we do for cats. Where you catch them, you're like, all right, you're sterile. Here you go. You can go live the rest of your life.
If only.
but what were you saying, Eric? I didn't mean to step on you there.
Oh no, it's okay. What was I saying? I don't remember. We can move on.
Okay.
Like, that's enough about the barred owl shooting. Let's get back to talking about the first of the year birding challenge, which I was going to bring up. We've had like most of them have been really good. There was one notoriously bad one that we still talk about from like a species perspective, where Rob was there. It was me, Derek, and Rob, and then our friend Bill met us for a little bit. And of course, any of these you can watch on our YouTube channel for anyone listening if you want to see these. But we went out to like the southwestern part of Wisconsin because there was a Hammond's flycatcher that was out there, which was, I think, a first state record, wasn't it,
I
Derek?
think so,
First state record Hammond's flycatcher. So we went out to see it and we got that one. And then for some reason, we decided to spend like 3 hours looking for gray partridges in this part of the state where they like used to live years ago and no one had seen them really since. And we also tried to find Eurasian tree sparrows and didn't make it. And so you can just like watch in the video us getting more and more depressed without finding anything.
It was like a brutal amount of time we spent looking, I think. Because so when we started birding, gray partridges, like people knew where some were, and it was like a thing you could find. But now I feel like they're more or less extirpated from the state, so like there really aren't any reports anymore. But yeah, now we try not to spend that much time just cruising around looking for something that may or may not be there.
We have a very pointed schedule now, which you probably noticed last year, where we're just like, we're going here, then we're going there, and then we're going to go there. And unless a purple sandpiper is reported again, then we're sticking to the schedule.
That was pretty awesome, that purple sandpiper.
Yeah,
That was a cool
so
day.
did you guys find that thing or did somebody else report it? Like, how did that go about?
We were just driving. So here was the thing that was going on. There was a couple of rare birds that were reported that day, or that we knew of existed. So, Eric, you might have to jog my memory because we went to the South Kettle Moraine State Forest, and then we went to this one park that was in Waukesha County, and then we were going to go try to find the tufted duck because there was a tufted duck that got reported by our guy Nathaniel Wegner, friend of the program, as Pat McAfee would say. And so we were headed that way, and then as we were on like the highway to go there, the freeway to go there, we got the report that the purple sandpiper was found. So we just like went right over to it. It was very lucky that it got reported as we were heading that way. We did not find it. Like we found it, but we weren't the initial finders.
It
Gotcha.
was pretty perfect how that worked out too, because right when we got the text that there was a purple sandpiper, we were like 2 minutes from the exit to get off there. It all just worked out perfectly to see that bird.
I feel like that's the best when you're on a roll or you're out in an area and then you get a rare, like a report that another rare bird is in the area. You're like, I'm 5 minutes away. Like, let's just go see that real quick. We've had some days like that, like out in Madison, especially during migration, where you'll just like things will just keep getting reported and you'll be like, let's go there. Let's go here. Let's do this.
Yeah, like you can have some really lucky days. We've had some really good first of the years in recent memory too. Like that one with the purple sandpiper was really good. I feel like last year, like we got a really nice total as well, even though I don't think we did we find anything that rare last year?
I
What was the
used the
finding?
skull. That was all
Ooh.
right. I don't think there was anything mega rare though. Not nearly like the year before.
I'm like, where did we even go last year? Like, what did we do first?
I know we were in the Dane area because there was that trumpeter swan that was hanging around that park that we got.
We
Yeah,
usually go
we
to
did
something.
quite a bit. We did quite a bit around the Madison area and then went
Oh, we went to the
east.
Arboretum. That was the first
Yeah.
time we went to the
Yeah.
Arboretum.
Yeah.
Then after that, we went to Johnson Creek to look for gulls and then went to the Milwaukee lakefront area.
Yeah,
Yeah.
normally spanning like Madison, Milwaukee are like the two Wisconsin hotspots, more or less, at least down in the southern part. So it's kind of tough. You got to decide, do you want to spend the whole day in one area? Do you want to try to spend more time driving and then also get both places? What'll be harder this year is there's no snow on the ground, really. So where things are normally concentrated, in the open water and the feeders and stuff, I feel like stuff's going to be more spread out.
It might be a low total kind of year, but hopefully the gray-crowned rosy finch is still around. I think that that's probably going to be our first target is to go to Devil's Lake, but then you kind of deal with the fact that you're having to hike up that bluff in order to go get some of that stuff. But we should be able to pick up stuff on the way. Like there's pigeons there, so knock off the very rare pigeon on the list. And you could get a pileated, Townsend solitaire should be there. Maybe the golden eagles will make an appearance, but On the first two, it's like, how long do you spend in a certain place before you go? Like, you will probably get the golden eagle if you're there the whole day. But if we stay there the whole day, we'll end up with like 12 species.
We could get winter in there. That's always a pretty good one.
I feel like have you seen reports of winter wrens there?
I saw one there like a week ago when I was there.
Really?
Yeah, like right at the trailhead. It was just
Huh,
crawling up.
interesting.
A couple of weeks before that, like in November, there was a Carolina wren around that area as well. I don't know if it's still there, but
Yeah, I've seen there have been reports of it recently, but I haven't had luck with it there.
yeah, so we thought Devil's Lake would be a good starting point, and then we're not sure where we're going to go after that, and it'll depend what else gets reported. We're hoping that something super rare gets reported, like a wagtail, in the next couple of days, so we can just like have a very definite idea of where we want to go. Hopefully it doesn't get reported in like the northern part of the state.
So Eric, when you got into birding, we talk about this before. Like we feel like our birding by ear skills have improved quite a bit, like just from, the first couple of years to now. How do you feel like your skills have changed from when you started to where you are now? Of course, even doing some like work in the field and doing surveys and stuff like that.
It depends a lot on where I am and how long I've been there. Like by the end of the summer, out in Oregon, I felt pretty comfortable identifying like everything that I would encounter in the woods by ear. But, that's like maybe 15, 20 species that I'd regularly get out there. I feel pretty good with the common birds here as far as birding by ear, but I don't know. I tend to forget. I need to brush up on my bird calls pretty often to stay on top of them.
What do you use for that?
Merlin is definitely helpful to pull out in the field if you're doubting yourself. Otherwise, I'll just pull up eBird and look at the top-rated sounds and just scroll through them until I find a vocalization that sounds similar to what I've heard. I don't really
Gotcha.
have a good method of doing it.
Yeah,
Have
so for.
you heard of the CDs? That just like it's somebody that says like the sound or the call of the yellow warbler and it plays it.
Yeah, actually,
I feel like he's gonna
I
pull it
don't know
out.
where it is.
Oh no, I thought you were gonna do like a big reveal. Like,
Yeah, I thought it
who
was going to be like the CD player connected to a
I
boombox or
thought you'd
something.
be
It's
like,
like the
and it
winter
turns
wren.
out that's the
No, well,
sponsor of today's video.
I actually did have one here, but I must have moved it. I got a book this past summer that was like the owls and woodpeckers of North America, and it came with a disc just of recordings of all of them, which is pretty nice. When I'm heading out, looking for an owl or a woodpecker, I'll put it in my car and just play that section of the tape over and over again as I'm driving there.
I remember when my friend Bill and I would go birding all the time. There was like one year where we were constantly out, and he had a CD like that that just had every bird of North America on it. So it would constantly just be playing. Like, I don't know if he listened to music ever or just listened to the CD on repeat, but we were just everywhere we were going, like, the sound of the bells of Erie. And we just were like, yeah, it's a good one.
I mean, honestly, that's a pretty great strat if you want to learn them. I could see that working pretty well.
It was kind of like you would just hear so many of them in a row, though, that you would be like, I know what that one is. Or like, I know I've heard that one 1,000 times in the last 2 months, but I can't put my finger on what it is. I just know I've heard it.
Yeah. So a little background for people that don't know, there's an app called the Merlin Bird ID app where you can put on like sound ID and it'll pick up what it's hearing and try to connect a bird to what you're hearing. So that can be pretty useful out in the field. It does have some erroneous mistakes sometimes. It'll just be completely off. So it's good to just kind of use as like a reference of like, oh, that might be around, and then see if you can find it, or like to kind of double check things you think you might be hearing. And then when it has a bird that it thinks it has found, you can click the sounds and see if it matches up with what you've been hearing. So that's a good, really good tool to use, but it can also take people in bad directions if they think what it's saying is 100% true all the time. And then
It has
also,
the Philadelphia vireo issues.
it has vireo issues, but there's definitely species it has trouble with. But have you guys ever done the eBird quizzes? You can go to eBird, which is another good thing to report sightings and look for rare birds. You can do the quizzes. So you can actually pick an area and either do a picture quiz, it'll take people's photos, or an audio quiz, it'll take audio from that area. And then it'll have options and you can pick what you think it is and see if you're right. And then you can rate the quality of the photo or the recording. So it actually helps the eBird database get their media with what's top and bottom quality, and then it also like helps you learn those calls and species.
There's no way Eric hasn't done
No, I do those fairly often. Those
that.
are pretty fun.
He's
I
like, I
like
go through 100 a day.
them.
They are
No,
fun, the days.
it's probably once a month I pull them up and go through some. Especially if I'm going to be traveling, then I'll brush up on wherever I'm going.
Yeah, I started doing some for fun, and then I did one where I was like, let's just do a place I've never gone before. And I got through like two species. I was like, this is dumb. I don't know any of these birds.
Did you do like India?
I did. It was like it was something like that, or like
Bangladesh.
I don't know, some place in South America that I've never been, but they're fun to do.
You're just like, let's put this on a difficult level. Let's
Yeah.
go from easy to advanced real quick.
Well, sometimes you do get a photo that, is so bad it's actually hard to identify. And those are the ones that are kind of tricky. Or like an audio that's tougher, but it's kind of good that they're not pristine, because like that's kind of what you'll encounter out in the field, is not stuff that's, just a bird perching and singing in your ear, being right there for you to identify.
You probably don't know this, but do they just pick those at random? Like which pictures they do?
So I get the vibe that it's often photos and stuff that are unrated. So probably like newer things, because then it makes you go in and be like, this is a, one out of 5-star photo, or like 3 out of 5-star photo.
So it's kind of like a sneaky way to get you to rate unrated photos.
I think so. I can't confirm 100%, but that's kind of what it seems like.
You could be that guy that just tries to upload the most ridiculous pictures of things to stump people. Like you get a picture of like a red-winged blackbird where it's in a weird contorted position where you can't see any ID marks and you're just like, this will get them.
So I think you can also like report the photo, like this is unidentifiable because, and it has like different things. And you can like say if it's like a back of the camera photo, or if there's like too many birds in the picture, or like there's too many species, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, those are the tricky ones when it's a recording that has like five different species calling it, and you just have to pick at random which one you think it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Rapid fire on that one. Just make a random guess.
You've never done one of those, have you, Ron?
I've literally never done one of these.
I don't know how you should do one. They're fun. I
Where should
would
I go?
let's
Bangladesh?
I'd stick local, maybe plan for the first of your trip,
I completely fail on the Wisconsin bird
yeah.
identification.
But for people listening, if you've never, first of all, I think you should make an eBird account if you haven't. It's just eBird.org. It's free. And then you can make checklists and report birds you've seen and look where certain species are seen, and you can do the quizzes and stuff like that too. We have videos up about eBird and how to use it and stuff too. So that's definitely helpful. As well as using the eBird apps. There's a lot to learn with that. And then the Merlin Bird ID app too is super useful. That one's definitely been abused though by people that just take, they're like identified by Merlin, and they'll like put in their comments. It's like a pet peeve of more experienced birders. You don't do any eBird reviewing, do you, Eric?
No, that's all Rob. He does all of that around here.
Yeah, so
Bob's gotten a lot of attention tonight.
there's eBird reviewers that like will look at people's reports and if they're rare birds, and kind of have to email people and be like, there's not enough info here to confirm this and stuff. So that's like a whole nother realm of being in the birding world, is being an eBird reviewer. And I don't think they get paid for it or anything, do they? It's just
I don't
all
think
out
so.
of
It's all
volunteer.
volunteer. Do you think they're allowed to talk about people's ridiculous sightings, or is it like a HIPAA violation?
I think they can talk about it, because I've heard eBird reviewers tell me about some ridiculous things, or like people that notoriously will report crazy things. There was actually a poll somebody made on one of the Facebook groups that were like, have you ever been threatened by an eBirder about something like you didn't do, or like threatened by a reviewer? It was something along those lines of like, have you ever been threatened by something you've done?
Eric, has Rob ever threatened you when you've tried to report things in Portage County?
Not too badly.
I like that you had to think about it. Like,
No, I only ever get little slaps on my wrist for not uploading media of the Sismontanus juncos that I get in the
that's
yard.
very specific.
Yeah.
I love birding with eBird reviewers because then I know that they're going to do the due diligence of making the eBird checklist with appropriate notes so that I don't have to.
It's nice.
And it's like, Robert, are we just going to push that one through? And he's like, of course we are. You know, like he'll be out with Rob. He'll see some rare. He'll just be like, don't worry, I've got this handled.
Or I feel like it'll be more like they'll be like, why is this? I don't even know why this is still on the rare alert. They're here all the time or whatever.
A really like niche video would be like stuff eBird reviewers say.
That would be a super niche video.
Somebody out there would appreciate that. They'd be like, yeah, they do say all these things.
So I actually want to jump back to the spotted owl survey stuff that you've done. Can you tell us, like, how does that take place? Like, how do you find those things, especially if they're not calling really anymore?
Yeah, so what we would do is start like early to mid-afternoon and go out on a hike that some of them could be pretty big, like 10 miles or so. And you just head out with a big boombox strapped onto my backpack and blasting spotted owl calls as I'd go hit a series of like predetermined GPS points. And the whole time I'm just scanning the treetops, looking for movement, looking for silhouettes, listening for anything.
This is at night.
This is in the day.
Oh, okay.
And then what we would do is try to plan it out so that the hike would end around sunset. Because then, on top of your day hike, you have a bunch of night stations to call. So then you would drive around and stop at each night station and play the spotted owl tape for 10 minutes at each spot. And then just periodically, I'd turn on my flashlight and just scan it all around the trees and look for stuff. Yeah, I've got a here. I've got a bright one. I think it's
Oh,
90,000 lumens, so it would
wow.
light up the woods pretty well.
How often would you encounter an owl, like a spotted owl?
Spotted owls, not often at all. They're super hard to get out in the local area where I was. But we're also doing barred owl surveys out there too, so we were still collecting a lot of useful data.
Were those a lot more frequent?
Yeah, you'd get barred owls most nights. Some nights you'd get, I don't know, maybe like half a dozen or so.
I feel like I can hear the hatred in your voice. You're like, yeah, we get barred owls all the time. I do have
Yeah.
to ask this. Did you ever have any weird encounters out in the woods at night?
Yeah, it sounds kind of creepy. You're
Yeah.
just out all alone doing these surveys.
Plus, Oregon, Pacific Northwest, like Bigfoot capital of
Known
the country.
Sasquatch breeding ground, let's be honest.
Yeah. Did you ever have
Yeah.
any like weird stuff out there that you couldn't explain?
You know, there was one time where I might have it was when I was doing a Merlette survey, and I headed out the night before to just camp because the survey started like an hour and a half or 45 minutes before sunrise. So I would just drive out there and then camp, and then I could just wake up and do the survey in the morning. Well, I was eating a bunch of peanuts, and I was just chucking all my peanut shells out of my car window, and then after it got dark and I was trying to fall asleep, I heard a bunch of footsteps like going around the vehicle, just like pacing. And I thought it must have been a dude because I was like on a road kind of not too far from an area where I've seen people camp before. So I was just like, oh, I don't want to deal with this. I'm just going to pretend that I'm asleep. So I didn't look out the window or anything. But then in the morning, all of my peanut shells were gone, which was kind
Oh.
of weird,
Yeah.
but nothing, you know, too crazy.
That is weird.
So you were just
Yeah.
sleeping in your car?
I'd sleep in my car on the colder nights or when it was raining. But then I would sleep in a hammock most of
What's
the time.
your move for sleeping in the car? Were you just in the driver's seat or did you try to lay down in the back or?
I'd go in the passenger seat and just recline it all the way.
Because the driver's seat's for work. Passenger seat for chilling
Right.
and relaxing, and then
Right.
there's
What am I
playing
sleeping
tunes.
for? Oh, I forgot to talk about this too. It was you, I think, that just got back from a pretty big trip out west, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just got back from a road trip going through Texas and to Arizona, which
Ooh, that's a
was
good
yeah, like two of the
combination.
best places to go birding.
I know. Yeah, it was really, really fun. I made it down to South Texas, did South Padre Island, and picked up a whole bunch of the rare stuff that's been there. This fall has been really crazy for rare birds in Texas.
Two Texas
Eric's found the
question.
bare-throated tiger heron.
Yeah, the tour group I was doing at the festival, we were the one that had the bare-throated tiger heron.
What a
Oh, you were on that.
celebrity.
Yeah, when it flew through, like I was there as it was coming through. And originally someone was like, oh, there's an American bittern like flying through, like that's cool. And then Brian Koch, one of our other guides, he's like, that's a bare-throated tiger heron. And everyone's like, oh, like we had one of the people in our groups got really good pictures, and we were all like gathered around. We're like, yeah, that's definitely, a bear-throated. It was wild.
Oh, that's so cool. That must have been crazy
It
being there
was, and I was,
when it was first seen.
and I filmed it too. It's like,
Oh.
so it'll be part of like a thing about the festival or its own thing. But did you get to Santa Margarita Ranch to go see that?
No. I went with my uncle in his Tesla, and our main dilemma was just that there weren't any chargers in that area. It was kind of
That's
a
fair,
zone.
yeah.
Yeah,
And
so
did you see the gray-collared bucard?
we did, yeah.
Nice, that's cool.
That
That's
was
another
cool.
really rare bird for South Texas.
Yeah. Where's the Bacard at right now?
Resaca.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So for those that don't know, South Texas is one of the like world's best birding destinations because Texas goes so far down, you basically get all the Mexico species that like don't go really further north. So it's like crazy. And then Southeast Arizona also has a ton of amazing stuff too.
Definitely like birders' paradise areas.
Yeah, so like if a lot of birders, if you're like, well, where's your top place to go? Like a lot of them will say South Texas, a lot of them will say Southeastern Arizona.
I
Costa
say
Rica
the
is another
Great Lakes
huge place.
states.
Huh?
I say the Great Lakes states.
Underrated, probably. So what else did you get in South Texas?
Oh, there was a lot of good stuff down there. Got the cattle tyrant.
Nice.
That was really fun bird. I was like laying down on the sidewalk taking pictures of it, and it just like walked right up to me. It probably got within like 2, 3 feet of me. That was a pretty wild encounter.
Wow. And so again, for the people that don't know, cattle tyrant is a bird that's a South American bird that was never really seen further north. And so it's just like this little yellow looking cute bird
I was gonna say,
that
it sounds like it'd be massive.
it does. It sounds like it would have like a, rule
Rule
with
over
iron
everything
fists
because
kind of
it's
deal.
18 feet long.
But it's presumed that it hopped on a ship in South America and then hopped off in the US. So it's been hanging around the like northeastern part of Texas, just chilling like in a dumpster and like by this kind of like back alley area. So it'll hang out like on the buildings around the dumpster, presumably eating bugs around there. But so a bunch of people have gotten to see that. I don't think it's been formally accepted yet as like a official record, has it?
No, it's still provisional. Hopefully that'll change, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, so there's like a committee deciding if they're going to accept that as like a legitimate record. Because the other option is if it was like somebody's pet, but like who would randomly own a cattle tyrant that just like escaped. But we actually had like a video go kind of viral just about the cattle tyrant. It got like 2 million views. Like it's a short form video, but
I
it was
saw that
funny.
one.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was funny because a lot of the comments from people like, I see these all the time in Minnesota or something. Like you could just tell people that don't know the identification features, like, it's a yellow bird. Those are in my backyard. You get all those people.
It
And then
does look a lot like a Western flycatcher, to be fair.
Western flycatcher or
Or
Western.
Western kingbird, my bad.
Yeah, any of those like yellowy ones. But
Yeah.
and then the other thing was people were just like dumping on Corpus Christi because it's like the back of an alley where like we saw it. People like, this doesn't look like America. This is like, and I'm like, it's a back alley. What are you gonna do? Does your country's back alley look beautiful?
You got to get to know the back alleys of America if you really want to know America. But what else did you see down there? Did you get like what are the pigeons down there? The red-billed pigeons, is it?
Red-billed's more a
Yeah.
like, oh, you did get one?
No, I was saying they
Oh,
are
but
down there. I didn't get any.
yeah, that's like a Santa Margarita Ranch thing too.
I mean, I've never been down there before, so there was so much stuff that was new to me and really exciting. Like some of my favorites were just like the Kiskadees and the Green Jays. They were so much fun to watch. But we got like the roadside hawk,
Nice.
Clamato falcon, Got the American flamingos that were down there. I think that's most of the rare stuff. But yeah, a lot of really, really cool birds. And then in Arizona, we got the rufous cap warblers that have been hanging out
Was that the Florida Canyon ones?
there.
Those things look like they were so cooperative.
So I showed up there and just like sat myself down. There's this like old stone dam in this canyon, and it's all dried up, and there's just like a tiny trickle of water coming out of a crack in it. And it's forming like a little puddle on a rock. So I just sat down in front of that, and within like 5 minutes, a rufous cap warbler pops out like 5 feet from me, and then it just starts drinking and bathing. And then another one comes right behind it and does the same. And they were just super, super cooperative. It was a
Wow,
really cool
that's crazy.
experience.
I'm kind of mad about those because when me and my friend Nathaniel went down to Southeast Arizona, we had to
That's the
hike
program.
through Patagonia Lake State Park, like this really remote, wild area. And we just got like glimpses of one kind of working its way through the foliage. And then people post these photos. They're like, I took this with my cell phone. And it's like 1 foot away. I'm like, why couldn't that have been down there when we went? It looks like it's so close up.
Yeah, I wish I could help you, but I don't know. The birds will
So,
do what they
yeah, that sounds like an
want. It's
amazing
actually pretty good
experience.
luck, though, to have around, Eric. I feel like I don't remember ever going on like a bird chase with you and not finding whatever it was we were looking for.
Yeah, or you've been my good luck charm. I don't know.
Possible, but you're the one that's getting point blank views of roof scap warblers, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. I also, despite getting the gray-colored Bacard, could not get a rose-throated Bacard, which are, supposed to be much more
Interesting.
common. Were there a
Yeah.
lot of them supposedly down there this time of year? Because when we were down there last year, there was just the one. There were at least a couple of spots where they were being seen, mostly at the same spot as the gray-colored Bacard.
Yeah, I had one at Resaca.
Way to rub it in.
I didn't have a gray collared Picard, so that's like the first one in the US that's like chaseable, basically, I think.
Think
And a
so.
ton of
I
people
think
have
it's
gotten
the
to see it.
third US record, first one for Texas.
Yeah, one of my friends sent me a picture from the parking lot of like a ton of people just looking up, and he's like, when the rare birds just perch out in the open so like everyone can see them or something.
Yeah. I
It's
know that's
wild.
what it was like. It showed up for maybe only like 10 minutes, but everybody who was there got great views of it. It was really cool. There were
Yeah, that's neat.
maybe like 50 birders there, which it's always fun when you get a crowd of people looking at a bird. You
Yeah,
get
did
the
you get the hook-billed
community
kites down
aspect.
there?
What?
Did you get the hook-billed kites down there too?
No, we tried for them, but they were being seen really sporadically, like once a week or so. We just didn't
Oh
worry.
yeah, they were tricky when we went to. This is like just making me think about how fun it was when we went down to South Texas. Well, Derek
South
went down
Texas is
there.
awesome.
I went there with Derek last year, and it was just a blast.
If you have an opportunity to go to South Texas, I would definitely recommend it. And I think a lot of people think it's like really sketchy, but I've always felt pretty safe down there. I don't think there's really been a time where I felt like anything bad was going to happen.
People like
Yeah,
right on the border a lot of times too.
and Ryan, you thought it'd be different than it was, didn't you?
Well, everyone always talks about it being like really dangerous and stuff. And I don't want to say that it's not dangerous because I haven't been to every part down there, but it was like, I don't know, it felt totally safe to me. We were staying on South Padre Island, which is obviously like a big tourist destination and like spring break hotspot. So I don't know. Everywhere I went seemed fine. We went through a couple checkpoints. Those were pretty funny. We were on Boca Chica Beach, which you can actually like the Rio Grande River empties into the ocean there into the Gulf of Mexico, and you can literally just look across and see Mexico. So there's not even a wall there or anything, there's just a river. So yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I'd heard, that South Texas was kind of lawless, but I was comfortable the whole time I was there, which I wasn't really expecting, which could just be because I was hanging out with birders the whole time at state parks, but
I mean,
it
you
was
also
really nice.
do spotted owl surveys at night, and sleep in the car on side roads. So it seems like you're pretty confident in your nighttime sketchy abilities.
Yeah, maybe my perspective is skewed.
What did you think about I because when I've been to Tucson in Southeast Arizona, I feel very safe when I'm out birding, but I feel like Tucson itself has more of like a sketchy vibe than South Texas does.
Yeah, I don't know. I've had good experiences with Tucson, but I haven't really done much there. I've just kind of birded around at the local parks.
I haven't done any outdoor nocturnal camping in the city, stealth
No.
camping. I was gonna say the one thing that really stood out to me about South Texas is that the infrastructure there is basically built for birding. Like you go there and all the people in the nature centers pretty much know what's been seen. You know, there's all these state parks where they put out like food for the birds and different things. And it's really built for the ecotourism that goes there, which I haven't encountered a ton of other places like that. So, you know, you go to nature centers up here and you're like, what's the birding situation like? And they're like, I don't know, we've got some chickadees and a cardinal. And you're like, okay, well. And then down there, they just like everyone was on it with it because so much ecotourism about birds goes through there. That was like one thing I really noticed that stood out to me.
Yeah, that was really great. It was like, for those in the Midwest, it was kind of like the way the Saxon Bog is, where just there's a feeding station everywhere and all the staff are super knowledgeable about the birds in the area. That was my experience with pretty much every park I went to in South Texas. It was really cool.
Definitely a top destination. What else did you get to see in Arizona?
Who saw a spotted owl, which was one of the highlights of the trip. That
Of course.
was really cool. Found it getting mobbed by a big flock of Mexican jays, which was
Oh.
always a fun way to find an owl in the middle of the day.
The spotted owls don't seem like they have good luck with any other bird species.
No, they don't.
So I will say, speaking of owls, there was a day when me and Nathaniel were out in Arizona and we were looking for a, I believe it was a rufous-winged sparrow, and the points were like on the side of the road in like neighborhoods. We were hanging out trying to see if we could find this rufous-winged sparrow. And so we're out kind of looking in trees and stuff, and then some like there's a yard across the road with a fence. And like a dog comes over and like starts barking at us. So we're kind of like, like not crazy about that. And then like a lady comes over and she's like, I saw you guys looking at my dog. And we're looking for birds. She's like, what kind of bird are you looking for? We're like, rufous-winged sparrow. She's like, and it's been seen here. And we're like, yeah. And then she was just like, okay. And then she left. But it was just really weird. It was like she thought that if she just asked us questions, we wouldn't have answers. I don't know what she thought we were doing. I don't know if people have
You're trying
tried
to
to
steal
steal
her
her dog
dog.
in the
Is that
past.
what you're doing?
But then when we were there, we did find like a great horned owl in the tree over there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it was cool. It's always, you mentioned seeing owls during the day. It is really satisfying because like, I found your hiding spot. Like,
I was
nice
so
try.
confused where you were going with that
It
story and
comes
how it
around. It came
all
back
revolved around
around.
owls. Because I was like, did you just need to get this off your chest? Like,
It was a weird
I
experience if you're
tried to
talking
steal
about
the woman's
sketchy.
dog in Arizona or
We did
Texas.
not try to steal anyone's dog, but it was weird that that's her first thought is like, these guys are trying to steal my dog.
That like always happens though, if you're like birding around any house, is that people see that you have like camera equipment, they immediately think that you're trying to uncover something going on in their house or like steal something from
I
them.
think they just must be doing something sketchy and they're just paranoid about it or something.
Definitely possible. That I think we're both thinking of the same situation, right?
Yeah,
Well,
probably. So,
that
Eric,
actually sound
oh, what?
oh that sounds like kind of the opposite of my last Tucson experience. When I
Where
was
someone
there,
threw a yard on?
I was in a random neighborhood looking for paraluxias because they'd been reported somewhere around there. And I was just kind of walking down these streets with my binoculars and just scanning the trees and stuff. And this woman was like, "Oh, what are you doing? You're looking for birds?" And I was like, "Yeah, looking for paraluxia." And she was like, "Oh, we have them at my house. Why don't you come over?"
Oh,
So that
wow.
it turns out that it was a mutual friend of mine with an old coworker. So then I
Oh.
just hung out in the backyard for a while watching birds, and yeah, it was nice.
Now I have two stories piled up. So the first one, we were looking for a great tit in Sheboygan, which, for those of you not familiar, that is an actual bird species that is from Europe. And they were released at some point in like the Chicago area, but there's a small pocket of them that lives in Wisconsin. And so we were just like in a neighborhood, like looking at someone's bird feeder because they'd been reported there. And I think our friend was with us who knew that lady. And so we were just checking out that house, and someone from a different house comes out in like a bathrobe and is like filming us with their camera. And they're just like, "What are you guys doing by my house?" And we're like, "We're looking at birds." And he's just like freaking out. And eventually he was like satisfied with our explanation when we showed him all these birds on our cameras. Like, "Look at these are birds. This is what we're taking pictures of." And like, as we're leaving, he's like grabbing his heart, like he's having a heart attack. And we were like, "There must have been something sketchy that either happened to that guy
He did not
before."
have a heart attack. He was fine for
He
people
like
that are
had his hand
concerned.
over his chest. He was like doubled over and vomiting.
No, he was fine.
He was
I
fine,
feel like
but
I gotta rein your stories in all the time. I'm
no,
like,
you do not remember this. He was like,
not
he was
really. I was
almost.
more just like, I'm glad this guy didn't try to like do anything.
He definitely had his hand over his chest. I remember this because I was like, that was a really big reaction. Like, even if you think that this random car of we were like 20 something at the time. Like, even if you think they're trying to see in your house, like, we're not doing anything. So, why are you so worked up? And now I don't even remember what the other story was, but it was going to be a great one that now you'll never get to hear.
You
I
try
said,
to steal somebody's dog?
no, I thought Eric was going to say someone tried to give him a dog.
Yeah, I successfully stole somebody's dog last time I was in Tucson.
Oh, I remember now. We were birding in Wisconsin last year, and somebody had, well, it was like pine grosbeaks or something they had reported
Oh,
at the time.
yeah.
And so we stopped by the house and we could tell there was a bunch of birds in the backyard. So we just knocked on the door and we're like, "Hey, can we like look in your backyard to see if there's a pine grosbeak there?" And he was like, "Yeah, you can come over whenever you want to." He's like, "Anytime you're in the neighborhood, just stop by." He's like, "We get them in the morning sometimes, so you probably won't see them now, but anytime you want to, just come over."
Oh, that's nice.
No, we haven't been back.
We
Maybe
should, though. We should.
just be like, "How's it going?"
I do kind of feel like with when you're getting that reaction from people, you're asking people stuff like that, it either goes really well or really poorly. I feel like there's not really a middle ground. It's like people either know exactly what you're talking about and they're like, yeah, like definitely you can come over, check this out, do this. Like, I'll make you lemonade. Or they'll be like, absolutely not. Get off my property.
Get off my property and never even look this direction again.
Although I do feel like people that just don't ask and they will just like try to do, like they'll try to trespass basically, like they give people a bad reputation then. So I feel like that kind of ruins it for everyone, the people that are disrespectful. Same thing with people that get like too close to owls and all this stuff. There's definitely like an ethical component of it that some people ruin it for everybody. Have you guys had like a specific time you saw somebody behaving poorly where you're just like, ah?
I mean, yeah, definitely. Like a lot of times, just people scaring stuff away by getting too close, or like if there's a rare bird. And I remember there was, I'm not gonna say who anybody was, but there was a time there was a Harris's sparrow that was in Mequon, and a bunch of people were watching it, and somebody just always had to be like 10 feet closer than everybody else. So it was like they kept just getting closer, and then the bird would spook, and then they would like run after it again. But yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely had people like pushing boundaries at bird chases, but never anything that's been like, horrible.
Well, cool. It's been great catching up with you, Eric. I'm excited for the first of the year birding challenge. Hopefully we can get either a high species total, a ton of rarities, or both combine them into one. I feel like kind of the max Wisconsin is like 50. 50 seems to be like if you can hit 50, you've had a pretty solid single day in the winter.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a good day. I mean, if we just get a Rosie Finch and nothing else, it'll still be a good day.
Yeah,
Don't feel like
so
we need more.
that's been around for a while on the top of Devil's Lakes. There's like this huge bluff you have to climb. We did a video looking for it. We released it a couple weeks ago if you want to check that out. So maybe
It
we'll end
was
up at
really
Devil's
fun
Lake.
that
But I think like if we wanted to do it the right way, we'd have to be like on top of the bluff at sunrise, which means climbing the bluff while it's dark. So if you can bring your mega flashlight, we can
Yeah.
just light the whole bluff up. Climb up and
Yeah,
then
I'm
be there when
down.
the sun rises. I have a flashlight too. I call it Mega Light. It's pretty bright as well.
We could take the slow sloping way. That wouldn't be like as dangerous.
No, but it takes longer.
Does it?
I think it does, don't you?
You get to go through some forest, could find some woodpeckers on the way down.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll have
Things
to
to
have
think
you back
about.
on to review the footage, Eric. It'll be like in NFL football, you know, where you do a film review. We'll be like, here's where you messed up that ID, and here's where you cost us time by slipping off the bluff. And
Like a John Madden style. See, you go here off the bluff when you should have gone here down the bluff.
he went this way when he should have gone that way, and then boom, there he is in the ambulance.
I do feel like there's normally something on the first that ends up being a time waste, though. Like we'll walk, this third, it took us 30 minutes to get to this place. There's nothing there. So you walk 30 minutes back. It's always good when you can maximize your time.
It's always darkness that gets us. It's never an unwillingness to continue.
Or snow, it was that one year. We drove to Milwaukee. We were going to see this cool stuff. We got stuck in a snowstorm.
Yeah, that was
So that
tough.
ruined our year one time. So hopefully we have some
Had a
good
good
weather.
total that year. That was actually a very good day.
They've all been good days, except for the gray partridge day, but we did see a Hammond flycatcher.
There
So
were some pros and some cons in that one. We got to see Rob wearing a small party hat.
yeah, that is true.
It's true. Check that video out. I feel like I pitched it a couple times. Good. Everyone should go watch it if you haven't.
Yeah, so we got first of the year burning stuff. We talked about some of your work out in the Northwest. Talked about some awesome burning hotspots. Anything else you'd like to add, Eric, for maybe some advice for people getting into burning since you got into it not that long ago, relatively speaking?
Let's see. It's not as complicated as a lot of people try to make it seem. It's very obtainable to get into birding. So if you're struggling, just persevere a little bit and it'll get a lot easier.
Very good. I like it. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody, and thanks for watching this episode of the Badgerland Birding Podcast.